Britain offers Europe a much bigger divorce fee and why Bitcoin keeps going up and up.
You get the FOMO trade, that's the fear of missing out trade. People buy just because it's going higher.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. In Britain, those who wanted to leave Europe said it would save billions of dollars, which could then be pumped into things like the National Health Service. Now it's emerged the British government is expected to offer the EU much more as a settlement, up to $59 billion, though the amount hasn't yet been confirmed. The BBC's Damian Grammaticus is in Brussels.
Officials in Brussels won't confirm. They say they're still working to sort these issues out, but they're definitely much more upbeat and have been in the last few days about this financial settlement, saying good progress was being made. And I think that is a reflection of the fact that the British side are upping the amount they're prepared to pay. Now, what Brussels is looking for, though, to be clear in this, is not a sum, but is an agreed methodology, essentially saying all of the financial commitments the UK has already entered into need to be paid, and it needs that set out very clearly in writing. I think that's the stage we're at.
In terms of a final figure, is it just that it's pretty difficult to calculate and we won't necessarily have one straight away?
Yes, exactly, because there's large different components to this financial settlement. They include the ongoing payments to the EU, the outstanding payments for many, many budget items that have been committed to in the years up until now that haven't yet actually been paid out. Things like bank guarantee loans made through EU institutions, which will not be repaid for many, many years. Pensions for EU staff, that issue won't actually be known for decades because EU staff working today who will draw pensions when they retire in perhaps 30 years' time, say, the UK should have to meet a share of that. And that is an issue that may not be known for 50 years. So there are many reasons why a final figure is almost impossible to come to.
Damian Grammaticus, let's do the numbers. Markets in Asia and Europe are mixed. Japan's Nikkei closed up 110 points or 0.5%. In London, the FTSE is down 43 points or 0.6%. Here's another number. $12. That was the value of one Bitcoin 5 years ago. Today, for the first time, it traded above $10,000. Before you rush to buy, listen to Craig Earlham, market analyst at Owanda Corporation. First, why the meteoric rise?
Well, I think there's a few factors. One is that it's become more widely heard about and known about. Two, the technology is fantastic, and I think there's been a lot of positive fundamental reasons for it, such as the adoption of futures contracts by CME Group, which makes the instrument more liquid and widely available. But a third, and I think this is an important component, I think there's been a lot of speculation. The thing with these issues is that when people see something rising quite rapidly, you get the FOMO trade, that's the fear of missing out trade. People buy just because it's going higher. And that's why people are calling this a speculative bubble, because when things rise so rapidly, there tends to be a lot of speculation involved, and these can often end quite badly.
Craig Earlham. The world is more prosperous despite wars, famine and political uncertainty. That's according to a report out today by Britain's Legatum Institute, which tracks poverty and wealth. But hang on, what is prosperity? Stephen Bryan is a senior fellow there.
We're looking to measure two fundamental aspects of the world. One is economic well-being. To what extent do people have jobs, a good satisfactory standard of living, but also social well-being, where we look at levels of health, both physical and mental health, education, and is the natural environment free from pollution and managed in a sustainable way.
So give us a sense of the top and the bottom of your global list. I imagine we're not going to have a lot of surprises there, but let's start with that.
At the top, we see a lot of the Nordic countries, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and other members of what we call the Anglosphere, the UK, Ireland, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. At the bottom, unsurprising, countries like Yemen. But there are countries where we don't have enough data, such as Syria, South Sudan, which we expect to be even lower in prosperity terms than Yemen.
And what are some of the surprising findings?
Within Latin America, which overall is the third best region for prosperity around the world, we're seeing not just Venezuela, which of course is in everybody's eyes, but the Honduras and the El Salvador are starting to show the same signs of declining institutional foundations, such as a weakened judiciary, challenged elections. And we saw that as a starting point in Venezuela for decline and prosperity. So we're concerned there for those countries too.
Now, prosperity is relative as well, isn't it? Because if you look at the US working class, they might be better off materially than the working class elsewhere, but they don't necessarily feel it. They don't feel it compared to other wealthier Americans.
Absolutely. And we capture this in two ways. Firstly, we're looking at poverty levels, both in absolute terms, where the US will do well, but in relative terms, where the US does less well, as you've pointed out. But we also look at it in terms of social tolerance, and informal aspects of freedom, such as the way in which minorities are trusted and respected around the community. And again, this is an area where we've seen the US in the last few years, as well as the UK, dropping in contradiction to where the rest of the world has been rising in that area.
Stephen Bryan. Finally, the world's oldest Christmas market opens today in Dresden. It began in 1434, a one-day affair to sell meat after Advent fasting. Today, it's got more than 200 stalls, millions of visitors, and the main attraction, the world's largest rum and raisin Christmas cake. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.